In every generation, there is a virgin. He alone will watch the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness for the first time at least once a week. I am a Buffy virgin. Hey, welcome to another episode of Buffy Virgin. I'm Michael. I'm the Buffy Virgin. We're watching season 2, episode 2 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. On the show today is Travis Morrison McKell, a physician.
Hi, good afternoon, Earthlings.
Dennis St. John, a horror comic artist and writer.
That's it. That's all I am. Hey, guys.
And John Landis, a school teacher and a brow furrowing type.
Hey, guys, what's up?
That means intellectual. That's what that's like a byword for intellectual.
He's a real Giles.
Giles type. So we've got a slightly new format for the show, which we did last episode, where we're going to open with a description of the episode. It'll be narrated by John Landis, noted voiceover artist. And then,
oh, I didn't send John anything.
Yeah, I don't have anything to read.
I thought we agreed that the person writing it would read it.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, Travis was gushing so much about John's voice.
It was a silky smooth voice.
I guess we agree that, I mean, John's going to read what I write, so I'm not reading.
Okay, so.
All right. I'm sorry for the listeners. I'm not going to match John's vocal stylings. I just can't achieve up to that level, but I'll do my best. I tried to write a little bit shorter review.
So after we hear about the episode, we're going to talk about weird noticings and trivia related to it. Questions for the group, and then some themes, and then we're going to do predictions, a body count, recommendations, and then we will see you next week.
All right. All right. Okay, so some assembly required, aka Friday Night Frankensteins. Buffy and Angel are having a relationship talk and staking a vampire when Buffy falls into an open grave. Talk about nightmares. But this wasn't from a vampire. Someone dug up the grave and stole the body. But who? A flesh-eating demon? A voodoo witch doctor? A zombie? Coincidentally, we meet creepy Chris and eerie Eric. Chris is smarter than Willow, never a good sign for a Sunnydale student. And Eric takes pictures of his classmates to masturbate to later. Or so he claims. We learn creepy Chris has a dead football player for a brother. And the Buffy gang decide to go to the cemetery and see who else has been dug up. They find 3 empty caskets, and at the same time, Cordelia finds body parts while hiding from Angel in a dumpster. The two groups piece together what's happening. Someone is building a woman. But who? Chris and Eric? Obviously, yes, it's Chris and Eric. And they still need a fresh head to make an undead girlfriend for Chris's older brother, who's been brought back to life by science. His head, with thick stitching, looks a little like a football, so we'll call him Football Head. So anyway, what head does Football Head want for his new girlfriend? Based on Eerie Eric's photos, he has 3 choices, and he picks Cordelia. Chris and Eric try and fail to kidnap Cordelia. Cordelia narrowly escapes a kidnapping, what for most people would have been the worst moment of their lives. But Cordy, it's Friday, and she doesn't let it affect her cheerleading. Chris turns out to not be an evil Frankenstein, just a misunderstood one, and helps Buffy. While Eric, who turns out to be just as evil as Igor's usually turn out to be, helps Football Head successfully kidnap Cordelia at the big game to chop her head off. While Giles and Jenny Callender are having their first date, Chris and the Buffy gang go to the old abandoned science lab, which is apparently on the Sunnydale campus. A fire breaks out, and Xander is the one to save Cordelia, while Buffy fights and is about to lose the battle over life to Football Head. But Football Head dives into the fire to save his headless corpse girlfriend, because love makes you do the wacky, and just like the monster at the end of the original Universal Frankenstein, presumably perishes. Giles gets his second date, Buffy and Angel patch things up, and Xander and Willow remain alone, Xander ignoring Cordelia's kindness. The end.
That was beautiful. All right.
Yeah, that was awesome.
All right. So I originally wrote a longer version, but I cut out about 2 paragraphs. So, but I tried to hit every subplot, at least touch on it. So
excellent.
That was great. That was super funny.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I like the little, your point of view about the photographer, Chris or whatever. That's great.
Because his excuse is like, these are from my private collection. He says, we'll take your photos if... I mean...
like, that's an excuse.
Yeah. That's his creepy excuse, which is maybe worse than picking heads for Frankenstein.
So right away, looking at weird noticings, I'm seeing some very conflicting perspectives on Angel's acting.
John's just a hater. He's just a hater. I don't understand.
I'm sorry. I didn't notice any difference. I feel like Angel is still, you know, being Keanu Reeves.
I think Angel, the only big difference this episode to me was that Angel dressed like in a different, less badass costume this week. He was like, what if I really...
He looks like he's gonna go out yachting.
Yeah, he looks like he's, you know, Marty McFly or something. He's like, what if I really tone it down?
I mean, I guess he just got better dialogue, I guess. I mean, there's still like kind of like wooden, like a woodenness to his face. I don't know. To me, the timing is much better. The delivery is much better. The tone. And there's some more expression.
But you would describe him as wooden, right?
No, I don't think I would. There was like this one scene in the library where they kind of zoom in on his face, and it's not very expressive, but it's not really needed to be. It seems like a little bit needless zoom. But you know, he's delivering his lines much better, at least. Especially like it's very fun in the beginning. You know, that opening scene's very fun.
Yeah, I like that scene. I mean,
the writing is great, so it helps you. When you have good writing, your acting is much better. There's no stupid lines like, why are you riding me?
Right, I did.
Which will remain for eternity, his worst line in a television series. Ever. I don't know. John doesn't seem to agree. That's okay.
That's a good sign.
Wait, I mean, I think, should we take a vote here? Has Angel's writing improved? I say nay.
Well, I think we know how this vote will turn out. That's not a fair vote.
What do you mean it's not a fair vote? I vote yay. So there's the two undecideds.
Right. So unless your vote counts for more than one, I think we all vote against
Angel. You all vote against me. Again.
Yeah.
Again.
Again. At least it's documented now for me to refer back to.
Angel has yet to prove himself to us, but he's working on proving himself to Buffy.
I don't know about that, but...
I don't. I'm just trying to help, man.
I mean, I do like that scene because Buffy acknowledges, you know, why she was doing the sexy dance in the last episode, which was some consternation for me, like, because I felt like her motivations were weirdly unclear. And she says specifically she's doing it to make Angel crazy. So that kind of clears it up. I don't know if it makes it better, but at least it makes sense now.
Yeah, if you do something shitty and then tell someone you did it, that undoes it, right? I like that Buffy falls into an open grave.
Yes, me too.
the grave robbers, right, have done nothing to like hide their crime.
I also, we know from nightmares that is like one of her nightmares, right, is being buried alive.
It comes true the very next episode.
How many times is Buffy buried alive? That could be a separate count.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll call it two, right?
Yeah, two.
At least now.
Oh, right. It's when Buffy falls is in a casket. For whatever reason.
For whatever reason.
Oh, God.
Travis, you have a point here about Google Play?
Oh, yeah. I guess I can talk briefly about that. So I have a DVD from early release of these series, like 2001, 2, whatever. So early DVD copy of this, which I feel isn't great. And then so I compared that to the Netflix and the Google Play quality. And hopefully next, maybe I'll compare it to the Apple Play Store. But on a Windows PC, the Netflix quality is, it's zoomed. It's not pan and scan, but it's not letterboxed anymore. So it's a 16:9 ratio. I think it's like that in the app on your phone or tablet or whatever. The contrast is better. So compared to the DVD, which is 4:3, which right now currently is very dark still. So I'm not sure that the lighting was all that bad, but the transfer must be really bad for the DVDs. The Google Play Store has it in 4:3 aspect ratio, which is faithful. And has improved lighting or improved contrast. I'm not sure what you want, how you want to call it, compared to the DVDs. So actually right now, I think the best quality, if you want to watch it, would be from the Google Play Store on a tablet. Would be the best lighting quality. I couldn't even see Buffy yo-yoing.
Every format.
I couldn't even see Buffy yo-yoing on the DVD. So I'm actually
what she was yo-yoing.
She was yo-yoing in the graveyard.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I only watched it on the DVD, so I missed that.
So my plan is actually I'm gonna buy another. Nowadays, in 2017, they only sell Buffy as a complete box set. They no longer really sell the single seasons. I'm gonna buy a recent box set, which wouldn't be recent. It probably would be pressed, created maybe 8 years ago. 9 years ago at this point, but I'll buy a new box set and see if there's any difference in the transfer there.
I think I probably have the same DVDs as you.
Yeah, they don't sell single seasons anymore. So
yeah, I have to switch the aspect ratio on my TV, and like I sit far away because the show wasn't built for like HD.
Close up, so, yeah,
you know. There's oddities of trying to watch the show.
So right now, and so hopefully I'll do this for each episode. For right now, the current verdict is the best looking quality is Google Play, presumably also an Apple, maybe iTunes would also have very good quality. Those would be the best quality. And then after that, it would be best aspect ratio is going to be the DVDs with difficulty seeing in dark scenes. And Netflix is the least good quality, is average quality, but pan and scan or cropped.
Yeah, I think the 16:9 ratio is not good for Buffy.
It's not good. It looks stupid in a lot of cases. The key is they haven't yet, so they went back and redid Buffy the Vampire Slayer for HD for this defunct TV station called Pivot. And in doing that, they screwed up a bunch of visual effects, and they screwed a bunch of lighting in the redo. And in that, the vampires, they turned to dust in a really awful looking way.
Oh, so they actually re-CGI'd some scenes?
Yeah, but they did it worse.
Weird.
Yeah. So you can tell that the Netflix, I looked and you can tell, that's how you can tell you're watching one of the redo or reprocessed Pivot rebroadcasts, which is not what Netflix has, because when they go to dust, they the dust just like they do on the DVD.
Huh.
Because that was a special effect, and when they remastered
it or whatever,
they remastered it, they had to add a different effect, and it's horrible on the Pivot.
Anyway, huh.
So right now my verdict actually is Buffy, Google Play, or Apple iTunes will look the best.
Interesting. That's yeah, like
season two. I'll go back and look for season one for you guys.
The Star Trek original series nowadays has like all the new CG on it.
It's the worst.
Like, some people, it's weird. Some people like it, but to me, it like
it spoils it.
They wreck the coloring because the effects coloring matched the show with these bright colors, and now they color it in this gray, more normal Star Trek universe. But
I'm
like,
sorry, who's the guy watching Star Trek? This is a tangent, obviously, but who's the guy watching Star Trek, a Star Trek episode from 1967, and saying, I would enjoy this, except that the models look fake? Like,
yeah,
that's a zero person audience.
they did the Blu-ray transfer. Are you talking about they remastered special effects for Blu-ray?
What they did, and there's a good reason for it, is they went back to the film, right? But all of the effects were done, you know, sort of in SD, right?
Yeah.
So they had to redo the effects, so they would have looked, it wouldn't have matched.
Yeah,
from the like new film, but like still,
they didn't put the effort into redoing the effects.
No,
they made the wrong aesthetic decisions. All of their decisions were like to make it look more modern.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Instead of like trying to match color, like you got to color match the rest of the series. You can't have like
and aesthetically effects match it. Yeah,
some episodes are really bad. Like where it's really jarring, where you're like you're getting into watching Star Trek, and then they cut to an effect shot, and you're suddenly watching Babylon 5 shitty CG. It's bad. I really hate it.
Don't you dare badmouth Babylon 5.
So is this just the George Lucasization of like classic stuff?
It is kind of like that. Yeah, I think that there is this legit excuse that like you're going back to a film like with Next Generation, they redid a lot of it, but they did a much better job. It's more seamless. because they're going back to film, but then they have all of these with next gen. They have all these video effects that were done in video for SD. Yeah. So if you just blew them up, they would look terrible, right? Compared to the non-effect shots that are on film.
But somebody thinks they're adding value by doing this, right? That like,
yeah.
My hunch is they're just doing it to cut rate budget. Like they're doing the least amount they can so they can put the product out there. If Gene Roddenberry was alive, I bet those effects would be a whole lot better. You know, someone who really like legit cared.
But Gene Roddenberry was kind of a dork. I feel like he'd be into the new ones.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying like if the person who like really was involved with that, they'd be like,
yeah.
That's what it sounds like. I haven't seen the Blu-ray.
Even the worst special effect requires a lot of time, right? Like there's gotta be somebody saying that.
Do you want to spend $1 million or $4 million? The suits will only spend $1 million.
So it's just the budgeting up front. Like we'll spend this much money on new effects, but why spend anything?
Well, there's also, I think there's a read on the fans implied there about what they want to see. And I think that it has turned out to be true that most Star Trek fans don't mind the original series being redone that way. By and large, like if you scroll the comments on Netflix, they're mostly positive. It really bothers the hell out of me, but it doesn't seem to bother anybody else.
Well, obviously it bothers me because I brought it up. But it surprises me that it doesn't bother more people. Like my office mate is a big Star Trek fan and it doesn't bother him. And I'm like,
I find some of them damn near unwatchable.
So anyway, back to Buffy. I don't know. What else do we got to say?
This is comment about Cordelia remembering her dead boyfriend.
Oh, I don't remember what I said. No.
We have to go back to mine. Are we doing weird noticings and then at the end do questions?
All weird noticings.
We do all the weird noticings. Okay. All right. Never mind. Yeah.
So there's this thing with Cordelia, and it's not just that one scene. So she brings up, that she was traumatized by her boyfriend dying. And at first when I saw this, I thought she was talking about the time that her boyfriend was killed with the AV club by the vampires and she found his body, but she's not talking about that. She's talking about a second dead boyfriend. And yet in spite of all the shit that happens to Cordelia, this scene, the way that her performance is and the way the scene is sort of structured, it seems like it's implying that she's self-centered and is like putting this on display. And we're supposed to be like, yeah, Cordelia, you don't have real feelings. You're just doing this for attention. And there's another scene where she was just pulled out of a dumpster that had a dead body in it later. And it's again played like she's doing it for attention, like she's trying to seduce Angel. And it's just, we have a little like sympathy
for Cordelia. Yeah, no, Cordelia goes through a lot this whole series, but this episode in particular, she goes through a lot. And I think at this point, the gang is meaner to her than she is like she's coping. She's like the master at coping with crazy shit, right? She is like, I just got kidnapped by somebody I know. I'm going to still cheerlead. Like,
Well, I'm going to get into it in predictions, but I have a prediction about Cordelia based on this episode.
And she's, and she at the end is like kind to Xander and stuff, and Xander brushes her off, but like,
well, Xander straight up says that she deserves it. He says it's karma that all these bad things keep happening to her. Like, he's straight up like, you're a bad person, so bad things are happening to you. It's really, really mean.
Yeah, they are mean to Cordelia this episode.
And the things that she's done to them are like, oh, I don't want to be your friend. You're ugly. Like, that's the worst she
can do. But she doesn't even, I don't think she's even mean to them this episode. She's just like...
No, not at all. Comment I want to make here about the use of My Girl.
Yes.
Just straight up a creepy song. And there's no time when My Girl is ever sung that's not super creepy.
Yeah, it's always a creeper song. I'll believe that.
Well, the literalness of it in this is great. Like, making it literal is awesome. I'm literally taking possession of your body. Like, you're my girl.
Yeah.
He said, best line, Eric to Willow.
Look at those legs. No, thank you. I mean, this is the best line from Willow this whole episode. Like, nonchalantly, just sort of like, just water under a bridge. Like, some guy's like sexually harassing some woman. And Willow's just like responding to it, but in this way where she's like, oh, thank you. Like, super sweet and nice. Like, classic Willow. It's just a great, like, I could listen to that exchange. Like, I mean, I watched this episode like 5 times in a variety of different formats, of course. Or 6 times, I can't remember. And that gets me, like, every time. It's like amazing, like, banter. And then also, I guess personally, I did just buy a new film camera because of Eric is using this film SLR. So I'm not crazy like Eric.
Why would you take inspiration from Eric?
I love the sound. I wasn't taking inspiration. I was subconsciously affected.
I think one of the things, like, I'd say, like, today, that scene wouldn't exist anymore. It would just be, like, using, like, a fake social media to look at photos of girls.
Oh, yeah, there'd be some, like, horrible scene where someone's on, like, socialschool.net or whatever. I don't know, whatever, like, websites. Actually, I mean, I
remember. InstaChat or something. Yeah.
Like, oh, let me Snapchat this. Let me InstaChat this to all my friends, you know, whatever. But
I definitely went through a phase of bringing a camera to school and stuff. Yeah. I hopefully didn't come off this creepy, but I was, like, you know, taking photography class and thinking, like, I'll be the photo guy, right?
We were in the yearbook, kind of. Well, I mean, we slacked off, but some of us were in the yearbook, or kind of. I guess the other piece is, I used to make or develop, like, photos, and so, like, you used to make these really great 8x11 prints, like exactly what you have of Willow and Cordelia and Buffy at the end.
Right,
like it's just nostalgic. Like, it's like, I was like, man, I need to get back into film. And
I do like that he took
thing away from this, Travis.
He took photos of, like, the three main female characters. Like, what are the chances?
I also love how I don't know if this is the right word, how meta that is. Like, to have them it's really fun to watch this movie, or not this movie. Yeah, I'm so insane. I think it's a movie. To watch this episode, and then, like, in the episode, you see, like, these, like, they obviously took those pictures, like, during, like, break on set, and, like, they still had to go develop them and stuff. And it's just, like, kind of, it's really fun to, like, I don't know. You see that, like, I don't know. I think it's really cool, and it's not meta because meta means it's out in the world, but it's, like, within the episode. And it's just, like, I'll tell you what it is. It's some fine prop work. Those are some excellent. Like, that will qualify as props, 100%. I don't know what that's called. What is that called, guys? What is truly meta then? Would meta be a Twitter account or something?
It's not meta. It's not meta.
It's just something else.
That's the wrong word. But.
Yeah, I don't know what it means, man.
They took
I'm not InstaChat.
Of a character as a prop. I mean,
yeah. I guess it's just, like, excellent prop work.
It would be meta maybe if it was, like, of Willow on a film set or something.
Yeah.
Right. That's what it would be. I knew it was taken at a film set. That's why I got all confused.
Yes, to other stupid observation. I feel like...
Also, how much would it cost to get the royalties for the My Girl? That was the one question I had for you all. Dennis, you deal in royalties on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, but I'm not the numbers guy. I don't know. I could look into it for you.
Are you like the import export guy? I mean,
I'm the guy with the eyes. I do all the approval.
You don't need to work. Yeah, you don't need to work the numbers. You got to work the inspiration. I get you.
At the end of the, you know, I do see the numbers sometimes, but that's not really super important.
Do you work in the land of the blind?
The guy with the eyes. Yeah.
Okay. Stupid prediction. Wonder Woman 2, really creepy slow version of My Girl plays underneath the trailer. Wonder Woman is trapped. Anyway, My Girl.
I like that.
There is in this, not to go on a tangent, that's a tangent we don't want to go on. Never mind. But apparently, like, sometimes TV shows will get songs that they buy the rights for just for a broadcast, but then they don't buy the royalties or the rights to put it out on DVD, and that can hinder the release of TV shows onto DVD that otherwise wouldn't have been hindered. It's just interesting. But of course, apparently the Temptations, it's like $5 or something because it didn't hinder anything.
Right, because they certainly wouldn't have paid again, right, for that licensing. And it is, like, a very short clip. So I think there's something about, like, a 10-second rule or something for clips. Like some short snippets.
I might have just hit the free use.
Good, Mike.
So this is a stupid observation, but I noticed that Daryl's the dead football player, right?
Yeah.
And he dated Cordelia before he died.
Yeah. I mean, she ignored him, but
Cordelia's face on this messed up body part body.
Yeah.
So it's like, is this about, you know, he likes Cordelia, but wants it to, like, why doesn't he just try to convince Cordelia to date him again? That would be an interesting direction.
Yeah, that would be an interesting direction. I think it's the like the Frankenstein must date another Frankenstein, right?
Yeah, like, but that's unspoken, weirdly. Like, is the assumption that she, if she was a Frankenstein, the only person who will love her is another Frankenstein? Like, it sort of like backs her into a corner, or is the logic that just symmetry, or
that's like, it's explicitly stated in the episode. He said, "How could you love my face? How, you know, you would leave me, but if you were like me, we could be together."
Okay, so that is it then. Okay, all right.
That's the concept.
In Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, in the actual Frankenstein, he wants a bride to form their own race on Earth. He sees that they're a breed apart, that they would be a breed apart, and would exist outside of humanity completely. And that only, like, he's so hideous, only another hideous creature could love him, kind of thing.
I mean, my thought on it, and this is probably the opposite, like what the episode wants you to think, is like they're trying to basically create a girlfriend for Daryl without killing anybody or convincing anybody. And so it's like they basically get almost all the way there, and then they find that they can't just use a random head.
Yeah.
But that at that point, this is like a fallacy in software design and just in life in general. Like, you know, you invest a lot of time in this practice, so you're like, oh, I got to keep going all the way. Like, you know, actually, they don't need to kill anybody. They should, they should rethink. There should be like a, like they go to another, like go into a design sprint here and reconsider what they're doing versus, okay, I guess we need a head to finish this off. Like,
so I think in Buffy, there's a line somewhere in the series. Life's long when you're eternal. And I know that's a line in there. And that's not just from Buffy. But I mean, clearly, like, this is all kind of unnecessary. Daryl's been reanimated or undead for a year.
I think 2 years.
2 years. That's nothing. That's nothing when you're undead. And now they, you know, they got to rush it. You know, it's like, I mean, obviously the crash of the girls was lucky. But, you know,
science is best when it's rushed. Everybody knows that.
You know, I mean, admittedly, everyone says, you know, job doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be done sometimes, right? You're never going to be satisfied with the job, you know? But sometimes you just got to finish it. And, you know, I don't know how many, like, you know, things, how many, like, different euphemisms we can have for this. But you're right. I mean, it makes no sense. Daryl's undead. He probably will live forever if he didn't go jump into the fire. So it's rushed. It's weird. It's, well, I guess, you know, he's a kid. He died when he was a kid. He got reanimated. He doesn't have that maturity, that perspective that, you know.
Yeah, that's part of the danger of him is his impulsivity.
Yeah, impulsivity, yeah. And, and to start out, he was already a jock, you know.
Yeah. There's like a scene where he's watching the football game and like we cut the shots of his eyes and it's like he's feeling nostalgia and stuff. And I'm wondering, like, are we supposed to be feeling for him right now? Because I don't.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, why is he sympathetic? And then why is Chris sympathetic, I think, is a really good question.
Yeah, well, just because Chris switches and then ends up running around a football stadium in a lab coat, which is like...
But his, like, his switching, I'm not sure he deserves... I think Buffy should still kind of punch him in the face. I think he at least deserves a punch in the face.
Isn't he going to go to jail? Isn't he going to go to juvenile jail? Like, he still broke some laws. My understanding was he was still going to...
Yeah, but I mean, just in terms of... just in terms of justice, like, why doesn't Buffy get to punch him in the face? Like, why doesn't... It would be sad.
He's still a corpse defiler.
Yeah.
Which this episode comes down hard against corpse really defilers.
But also, like, if he wasn't like semi-caught, I don't think he would have stopped the cutting off of Cordelia's head. I feel like he was sort of iffy on it.
Yeah.
But doesn't he represent like the goodness of what we all hope is in us, like the compassion, the good person that is corrupted and convinced to do something that they really shouldn't be. So that's why he's interesting.
I agree
with that. He's more like son of Frankenstein who... realizes he shouldn't have reanimated that corpse, but Igor has already pushed him too far.
But why doesn't Buffy, like, I think Buffy should still punch him in the face. Like, yes, he's half good, half bad, whatever, but like, it's interesting that Buffy constantly has her her power sort of undercut by, you know, needing her to feel sorry for the bad guy all the time. And I kind of feel like...
Well, they're also on a mission of time, and they don't have time. Like, they need Chris at this moment to tell them stuff. They don't have time to, like, beat him up for punishment, right?
That's true. That's true. I know.
I do love that this all took place in the abandoned science lab. Like, they don't cut to an exterior shot, but I would love if there was just an exterior shot of, like, the Sunnydale High School campus and then, like, a castle. Like,
I would love it if it'd be, like, Sunnydale High School and then, like, this building that is just lit up with red lights and looks spooky as hell. It's like, oh, what's that? Well, that's the abandoned science lab.
Or how about the fact that they have an abandoned science lab, and that's not the first place they look. Like, they know there's an abandoned science lab. Yeah. Buffy, he just tells Buffy, oh, yeah, we're in the abandoned science lab. Like, oh. I look through lockers. Why not go to the abandoned science lab?
One of my puzzled notes I didn't bring up was, like, why is it like the high school dumpster filled with human bodies? But it's because the lab was closed to it, right? So if they had used that as a clue, then we would have maybe, like, come to the lab first.
They're not interested in covering up their crimes. They're like, that's not even a thing.
Yeah, and the Buffy gang are definitely not detectives. They don't do any detective work to try to figure this out.
So stupid musing, like, when Daryl's kind of stalking Cordelia at the game, and you pointed this out, Dennis, when he's like looking wistfully at the football like game being played, I kind of expected him to rush in and like, stupid. The way they shoot that, it's like he might just jump back in.
Yeah. It'd be like a Rudy moment. Like,
oh, does anyone know what his football number was?
Number 5.
Okay.
He does a thing at the end. Third and long. What do you do?
You know, that's like, right. Yeah,
it's a number something. I can't remember.
I was thinking. I didn't write 19, it down.
Lucky 19.
Yeah. What if it was Lucky 19? That would have been great. Like,
oh, this guy's straight up evil.
Another clue that the Sunnydale is in fact a dream universe.
Yeah. Or just like, how about the like anti-sports messaging in Buffy? There's like the cheerleading, the baseball beating, and now this guy. And I happen to know there's other ones coming up. Like, there's a lot of like anti-sports sentiment coming from Buffy, which I think is one of the reasons I watched the show.
John loves that.
Yeah, this is definitely not a show for the jocks of high school. It's like,
I also remembered who that quote was. Life's long when you're eternal. That was Darla. Anyway, so I got that. I'm back in the saddle. I'm
my game face. But you just broke the timeline, man.
I didn't break it. Mike didn't know that. Mike will never remember what Darla said in season one. She said in season one.
Okay, she says, never mind, you didn't break the timeline at all then.
And the one thing...
Forget I said that. Delete that.
delete Dennis. Don't delete him. Really, don't delete him. I love Dennis. So this episode highlights my, like, the fear of all this Buffy insanity, which is... I fear that I will become that scary woman at home smoking a cigarette, watching reruns of something on a 4x3 fucking television.
That scene the most reminded me of Friday Night Lights, actually. I was just like, this is really, that's when I came up with, this is Friday Night Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Because it was Saracen from, Matt Saracen from Friday Night Lights. That's his, like, grandma.
So I remain totally terrified that, like, I really am that woman, and instead of watching football games, I'm watching Buffy. it's a legit fear. Like, I think anyone has a legit fear when they're watching reruns from a TV show that is now 20 years old.
You don't know how I mean, maybe you guys probably do relate to this when, like, I'm having a normal conversation with friends at work, and I all of a sudden start thinking about Buffy, and I was like, I can't just keep bringing up Buffy. Like,
yeah, Travis, it would only be really rough if you were watching the same episode of Buffy every time,
or like just one scene of Buffy. Like,
yeah, but I've had that thing too, Dennis, where I want to talk about Buffy with people, or I make a reference to Buffy now that I'm watching the show, and it's invaded my mental universe. Where I'm like, oh yeah, like the way Angel's a terrible actor, and like, I feel like, what?
I think we can stop doing the podcast right now. We've accomplished our mission. We're done.
We've ruined Mike for the real world.
Yay! I'll have to be. You'll only be able to be with one of us. You know.
So, So, stupid musing again. High school students, amazing scientists, but incredibly dumb. how is it they can, this is, I mean, I guess they're on Hellmouth, right? Duh. But, like, animate the dead, and, like, this kid is, I don't know, he just wants to, like, help his brother out. It's very sweet. It's actually, like, makes sense. That is a good use of your powers, is to, like, do something related to your family, not like take over the world, right? Like it's motivated, but.
And I just like the thing of like, we meet a new guy who's smarter than Willow. Like that just never goes well for the person who's smarter than Willow, right? Like she's at the absolute like apex of intelligence you can be in high school without like getting your head cut off or turning evil. Like,
yeah.
But it made me think, where was the body eating demon? Why wasn't he looking at Chris?
One more weird noticing here. Giles goes on a date with Jenny Callender at the football game. This is the worst place to go on a date.
Yeah, why would you do that?
Private. Like, you don't want all of your students to find you or whatever. Like, they should. Bad date, Giles. I mean, I know he's along for the ride, but I hope the second date, and I guess this gets into predictions, second date will be in a much nicer, more private spot.
Hopefully for them.
I do sort of like the trick in Jenny Callender's character that she secretly likes football. I think it's counterintuitive and it's funny and it works. That is nice. But yeah, no one would ever go on a date to their job.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad, you know, even though it's comedic that Jenny did what Buffy said, I'm glad Giles didn't take romantic advice from a high schooler. Like, you're a goddamn grown, you're a grown ass man. Ask somebody out your own way. Don't listen to what a fucking high schooler has to say. And Xander is totally mean about this high school librarian thing. That's not a bad job. Like,
yeah, no, it's hard to get a librarian job these days.
Yeah. I don't know why you got to bash someone for being a librarian, Xander. Fucking illiterate motherfucker.
Job too. He's really serious about it.
Yeah.
So, any other weird noticings before we move on to questions?
let's see.
Dennis, you had an observation about the body itself?
That might be more under themes or something. I just wanted to talk about the, you know, the gross nature of it. And that'll lead me to my recommendations for the week.
I guess for me, the weird noticing was the bit of dialogue from Buffy to Chris. And she's like, she tells him that like getting Daryl or something is not part of his job. She has this weird line about this isn't part of your job, which is just like a strange, it kind of was like a strange throwaway. Like, what is Daryl? Or sorry, what is Chris? What does Chris think Buffy is? Like, that's what's never resolved. Chris, like, how could he, what the hell does he think Buffy and Willow and Xander and shit are up to? I mean, he's obviously going away to juvie, so he's not going to be like around to really figure this stuff out. But that was like the one fun thing that was never resolved, and it was kind of a weird throwaway line from Buffy.
Is he going to go to juvie? Are the cops going to really come across this scene with the, like, they're not, because it all burned down, right? They're like, they're not going to come across the body.
But Eric's alive. And isn't he alive? They drag him out, right? Eric doesn't die.
By the cops at the end, is he?
We don't see. There's an ambulance there.
Well, maybe Cordelia can press kidnapping charges on Eric.
Yeah.
The cops in Sunnydale will not investigate the zombie-looking.
Yeah, no,
football heads.
And then the rest of the season is in a courtroom. That'd be great.
God, I would just totally go deep if this all of a sudden was a police procedural courtroom drama. Oh my gosh.
Law and Order Sunnydale.
I mean. Oh my God.
I feel like you just wrote a pitch for the like remake. What if instead of in high school, they're doing courtroom procedural?
No, I already told Mike I would voluntarily write a Star Wars movie, but it's a police procedural. And I think that would be amazing.
That's what he said.
Voluntarily. Of my own volition. My free will.
Not under duress. Not,
not coerced. No, there was no coercion charges. There was
on spec, I think is what you mean, right?
Well, yeah, I know. Spec scripts, yeah. Anyways, yeah.
Okay, questions. So, Travis, you have the first question here on the top there.
Yeah. I'm sorry, can you pause for 1 second?
Yeah.
30 seconds of Googling, less than that because I just looked it up. There is some fan fiction out there where Buffy is a judge Yeah. And it's called Conflict of Interest. And apparently I it's dirty when you read through it far enough.
So, what a surprise.
So it's all out there, folks.
Is her gavel a stake?
I don't even know if it's like in a vampire universe. It may just be the characters transported to a world where they're a judge.
I like, there's plenty of wooden things in a courtroom to throw vampires against.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess my first question was, what other scary movies or scary stories feature, like prominently feature grave robbing? I couldn't remember.
Like every Frankenstein.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. Number one, lots of Frankenstein movies.
Some zombie stuff and I don't know, probably some Edgar Allan Poe stories.
Yeah, you already referenced Pet Cemetery, but that's not grave robbing. That's just weird grave stuff.
It's grave stuff. Any Sherlock Holmes stuff involving like graves?
There's that movie I Bury the Dead.
Okay. I made a joke about the mummy. It's not grave robbing like anything like this.
Yeah, I guess Indiana Jones has a lot of grave robbing. Right?
So. Yeah. Tomb or grave
Tomb
robbing.
Raider.
I'll take either.
Tomb Raider. Tomb Raider 2.
I don't know. It was kind of fun. I was just trying to think about.
Has there been a video game? It seems like an easy component to do where you would go and steal better parts and attach them to yourself for upgrades.
That's a cool idea.
Has it not been done? You go to famous grave, like you'd like.
We're stopping this episode to open a Kickstarter.
All the levels would be in different graveyards. You go there, you beat up the bad guys, and then you dig somebody up and then attach the part, or you get a new character.
Yeah, so you get like a map to the graveyard that says like football player, and you're like, yes, or like whatever else.
Oh man.
So,
a lot of bad jokes.
Why does all this terrible stuff happen to Cordelia? And I know they say karma, but seriously, why? I feel like you can keep a running count of all the terrible stuff that happens to Cordelia, and it's epic.
Yeah.
It's in every episode.
It's epic, and we're so never invited to feel sorry for her ever.
Right? I don't know. I mean, I think you're right now, but I think overall, us reflecting on Cordelia, I think her arc, like I think right now we are coming to appreciate and feel sorry for Cordelia, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, also, I mean, again, don't want to spoil anything. I mean, I know enough to know that they do other things with the character later. Right. But like, at this particular moment in time, I feel like there's just like a Revenge of the Nerds aspect to Buffy that is not super mature, where we're going to watch the sports people and discover that they're evil and there's schadenfreude around that. And we're going to, you know, see the mean girl get her comeuppance and there's schadenfreude around that. And we're just going to sort of enjoy that. I don't think there's too much more to it than that.
Yeah, I think ultimate, like, on a rewatch, we end up liking Cordelia a lot more than we used to. Like,
that's true. Yeah,
I think you're supposed to feel bad for her. Like, I think I'm not sure what you all are saying. I feel bad for Cordelia in this episode.
Yeah, no,
that bad things happen.
No, everybody empathizes with her.
Okay, yeah,
yeah.
Particularly on a rewatch, but I guess the first time you watch it, you don't necessarily. But maybe you're not watching it so episodically, in a sequence
so closely. Part of it's like redemption, right? That's some of the concept, because she's supposed to be such a vapid, shallow person, in that, you know, strength through fire, you know, perseverance through, you know, that this is building character. And I already know she's got a lot of character, but
can somebody have too much character?
That's the question that you're asking right now. I think, much like Xander's horniness, which is a zero in this episode, there's a zero count of horniness, this will obviously just get better. And this is much more likable than the horniness quotient. So,
well, yeah. It's just Groundhog Day, right? It's the same story every time, because it's the same cheerleader getting traumatized every time.
Yeah.
Girl whose boyfriend is killed or goes
Maybe it's easy writing. Maybe it's an easy way to employ another actor if the same bad thing happens to the same. Right, because you could switch them out, right? It could be just like an extra each episode, or you can employ an actor that the bad things happen to, and then eventually use them. I don't know. Is it budgetary? Is it right? You know, I don't know. It's a good question.
It's a small high school. Somebody's got to get killed every week.
I mean, part of it is like, part of it's like a performance choice. Like in the scenes where I was noticing this in the scenes in this episode, especially when Cordelia is talking about her dead boyfriend, or she's talking about being in the body or in the dumpster with the bodies. So much of like what makes her come off as like the drama queen who doesn't really have those feelings is in her performance. Like, and I don't know if that was her idea or if that was direction, but like I feel like the scenes as written could be played really differently so that you would have a little bit more sympathy for her.
Well, and I think it's her strength that's keeping her from snapping by acting shallow, by being like focusing on the small thing instead of, I got kidnapped twice in 1 week. People tried to cut off my head, put me on. That weird line of like, you'll have the body of a 17-year-old. In fact, several. It's like, presumably she already has the body of, I mean, the actress is older, but.
That was my joke. I was like, she should be happy. She'll go from a 25-year-old to a 17-year-old.
But it's like.
Okay. Well, we've talked enough about Cordelia. I have a prediction. We can probably talk about it a little bit later. So the other question I had about it, this episode. So there's, Giles has a sports lie, which I like, which is that he cares about football or whatever. Like, sure, let's, you know. And I feel like that's something that happens all the time, where you get an opportunity to lie about sports. Once a year, maybe twice a year, you'll get an opportunity to lie about liking sports. And has that ever happened to you? Because, I mean, I have tons of stories about this. But
yeah, I mean, that happened to me right before the podcast. I was on a walk with a dog, and somebody was like, you go watching the Warriors game tonight? And I was like, oh, yeah, baby. Let me talk about the Warriors for a minute. Right. I'm not doing that.
I do that with my students. Buffy. Sometimes I'll pretend to know who a sports figure is. I'll learn the bare minimum amount of about a sports figure to use him or her as an example. And you know, when I'm teaching, I don't know. That's the premise of an episode of the IT Crowd. Is sports?
Oh yeah.
Sports lying.
They always try to walk it in. We're trying to walk in this podcast, man. That's the problem. And I got to tell you that
they're having a laugh.
I'm glad you brought this up, because a British, I told Mike this British YouTube channel I watch references the IT Crowd jokes about sports, about football, their football, their British football, or just regular football as opposed to American football. Wow, that's a great segue. That's a great issue. I think I have to lie about a lot of different things on a day to day basis. I don't like really stress that it like specifically about sports, because you're already lying about so many other things. You know, it's just sort of like, I think I probably lie about the sports I like and say, no, I'm not interested in that. I think that bothers me more than lying about sports I don't like. That's like a one-off. That's like a who cares, you know. But when you have to lie about the sports you do like, that's when you're like, I really don't like this. Just because, you know, mostly because you just don't have time to talk. You know, just, that's why you brush off the things, you know. I like swimming.
Yeah,
but no one else likes swimming, and I don't feel like talking about it with people who don't know what they're talking about.
We're going to talk a lot about swimming later on, though.
I'm going to have incredible insights. I think perhaps I have some insights into Buffy the Vampire Slayer already, but I did swim in high school, and things may become more relevant.
Go fish.
Yeah. All right, getting into themes, deep stuff. Unless there's any other questions, Dennis?
No.
Shaking his head. All right. So, Travis, you have this first question or theme.
Oh, I do.
But I don't know. This feels like it could be just musings.
Well, isn't that I guess my musing was when I wrote that question, I forgot that at the end of the episode, well, it's really important actually. So it really is important. There is like this whole theme of an age gap with love or with relationships, especially high school, because that's already a whole like, you know, mess of ants. I forgot at the beginning of the episode, I couldn't remember when they talked about his age, but apparently at the very end of this episode, incidentally, he says how old he is. And I can't remember if they've ever gone into specifics about this just yet, but that is very true. This is jogging a memory. We are going to go into specifics later on regarding his age in the season.
Angel's age.
So, but like, that's huge. Like, it doesn't matter if you're 2 years apart, 4 years apart, 5 years apart. I mean, 2 years is probably not a huge deal, but in high school, it's a huge deal. Imagine you're 240 years apart or 222 years apart and some change. I don't know. Age gap is is confusing. It's strange. As a child, it's strange. As an adult, it's strange. Age gap between siblings, age gap between parents, age gap with, you know, your lover, you know. That's never easy.
Nope.
I guess you guys don't really worry. They don't stress about the age gap.
Not so much. I mean,
but you're married. Like the age gap that was set is already just, it's set forever. Well, forever. So you already had like the set age gap.
The thing that would be interesting to me, and I know this probably doesn't happen except in the fan fiction, is like, you know, Angel's however many hundreds of years older than Buffy. And you know, when you're dating somebody and you're like, you know, you're swapping your media, like the stuff that's important to you. It's like, oh, have you ever seen Romancing the Stone? No. Oh my God, we got to watch Romancing the Stone. Or have you read X book or whatever? I feel like Angel, hopefully he's totally vapid, but he probably has a long list of BS that Buffy has to watch or check out.
I got a lot of Victorian novels for you.
I'd love to know what's on his list. And if it's just the Bible, I'll be disappointed. Some vampire. It's like, oh, the Necronomicon. If you check that out, that's you get me.
I don't know. John, you're not bothered by the, you don't think the age gap is like any fundamental dating
for me or for Buffy?
No, in general, right? That's the question. How important really is the age gap, right? To you?
Yeah, it's a thing that I talk about. There's enough of one in my relationship that it, you know, it comes up. But I also have a partner who is, you know, has a very distanced relationship to pop culture in general. So when I start talking about Denver the Last Dinosaur, as I did yesterday, she doesn't know what I'm talking about, partly because she's, you know, a little younger, but also partly because, you know, she's not the kind of person.
Not a lot of people are going to remember that anyway.
She's my friend and a whole lot more.
Yeah, that's... all anyone ever remembers from that is the
country she's from.
Yeah, and then there's also a nation gap. So like, there's some pop culture that she just wouldn't have had access to. So all of that mixes together. I don't think it's that big a deal, but I don't have a 200 year age gap, which I think is inappropriate. And
yeah,
not only that, but like,
that's a fundamental question. Yeah,
there's a moment in this episode where Angel is under the impression that Buffy's actually interested in Xander. As well she should be, not because Xander is any like worth dating, because he's clearly not, but because he's an age appropriate choice.
Yeah.
So I would never talk about this except that we've talked about this too long already. But the fact that
oh my God, Mike, you're the one who had the most opinions about age gaps.
Hold on. So Buffy dances with Xander and that makes Angel jealous. So even though he's 200 and however many years older, he still can't get over these really petty human simple emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is so petty. Yeah.
Like, you think you would get some kind of wisdom with age, but in fact, you just become a petty, jealous son of a bitch. You become a worse person with time.
Well, and it reveals like a fundamental damaged part of the relationship where he's like, Xander's just a kid. And she's like, we're the same age.
But, yeah. Hey, I'm also a kid. Yeah. Oh, she actually says that. That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also worse. I mean, obviously the other part of the trust issue is the fact that, you know, he's a vampire and he says like, I can't hang out with you. I can't be with you. I mean, there's huge trust issues. I mean, I guess that's that. Trust issues are trouble, you know, even if, you know, in any relationship, human or human vampire. I don't know.
So Travis, you actually have the next musing here.
Oh yeah. How'd that happen? I guess this is the wrong column, I guess, but I just think it's funny that Giles was really snooty about the quality of students at Sunnydale, which really speaks like badly of him. And we haven't really seen a lot of things there's a ton of things that speak badly about
him. He doesn't speak badly of him. He is surprised that a high school student is the one to discover revivification for the first time. I feel like I don't care how fancy the high school is. That's surprising.
It's not like surprising. Number one, we had a witch already that was switching bodies. I guess that was a mother of a high school student. All right.
We had also, kids build a robot.
Wait, it's not necessarily supernatural. I think we're given to understand this is not a supernatural thing.
No, not really, but I don't know. It just seemed kind of like a jerk move. Like,
I just thought of a question.
Just because he was the director of the British Museum, you know, he comes to, you know, Sunnydale, California, and, you know, oh, he can read sick languages. They're all demon languages, right? You know. Anyway, I thought that was a jerk move. It was weird. It was almost as weird as when he was holding books, walking up the steps in the library, only to walk down the steps in the library.
That's just bad prop work.
It was bad footwork, number one. That's what it was. You should have thrown those books and saved that. That's how you save that situation.
I know we've already moved on past questioning, but I just came up with a new question. Do you guys mind?
Do it.
What do you think Igor's plan was? Do you think he wanted to fuck that dead body or had already done it? Like, what is his motivation? Is he going to betray football head?
Yeah, I think he's just like, he's just so scummy and gross. You almost get the impression that he just enjoys the process. Mm. And that, like, I mean, I think his main function is to be there so that to be so awful and so skeezy that we can save a little bit of compassion for the other two who ordinarily would both be awful. Like, we need to save a little compassion, I guess, for Chris and Derek. So we're just going to create this other character who's pretty unnecessary to the plot, actually. It doesn't really
He's the Igor. You always need an Igor.
He's the photographer, the camera guy.
He's just like an evil thing. Some things are evil.
About high school, someone has to be the pervert, right? It's not going to be Xander.
Not anymore, man.
It should have been Xander. That would have been a better episode.
Way better.
Xander turned evil to help, he just thought he was doing like a weird like science fair project. He's like, why are you having me in this?
Well, no, it would have been consistent with his earlier character if he was doing it on purpose.
When he's just evil.
I imagine the episode going where Xander is working on this science fair project. The other guy has gotten all the body parts, and Xander's like, wow, these are really realistic dummies.
Oh, yeah. Because Xander's other thing is that he's apparently incredibly stupid half the time.
Yeah. Those are his big personality traits. Horny and stupid.
So relatable.
Right. So I guess moving on to predictions here. I'm so excited. I think that Cordelia is going to strike back, freak out, and start killing vampires. Possibly at Buffy the Vampire Slayer levels. There's just no way she can keep getting beaten down without like upping her game. I don't know when the show will switch, but she has to switch characters. She cannot be the victim for this long. She has a great backstory now for her to not, like, for her to be a hero. Because, like, she's been victimized way more than anyone else. Like, I would love to see inside her head where it's like she's remembering the basically like almost raped, kidnapped, almost murdered, people murdered, like, and then, you know, just culminating her, like, you know, training or getting crazy.
So I like that prediction.
I very much like
it. Takes the whole show for that to happen. It just feels like it can't happen soon.
Any other predictions?
Jenny Calendar and Giles is going to be much nicer.
Wait, say that again?
The second date with Jenny.
Oh, yes, that's right. You said that already.
It'll be a nicer date. I don't think it'll be at a restaurant necessarily, but it'll be nicer.
Can I do my pacing assessment?
Sure.
My pacing review?
I'll add that on the menu of things.
Before we do that, I do want to note, I'm sorry, while we're doing predictions, just that... There have been no predictions from the past were either confirmed or denied in this episode.
What about
we learned nothing?
Didn't Mike predict that Jenny and Giles would get together?
I don't think so.
No, I actually predicted Giles and Joyce would get together.
Yes, that's on my list.
Okay, I remember you saying somebody would have babies.
It's possible there's some I didn't. It didn't make it onto the list, but I don't recall that one.
Okay.
All right. So my pacing assessment, this is a prop assessment too at the same time. I think the pacing of the episode is overall very good. It's not quite as good as last episode. Season 2, episode 1 was extremely well paced. For me, what happens is the episode slows down in the middle when Buffy's investigating at Chris's home. And so the scenes where that happens, or the scene at Chris's house, it's too slow for me. And I think some of the scenes with Chris and Daryl, or Chris and Eric, is a bit slow, although there's some good prop work there. And I think at the end, when they're at the football stadium, for me, the static shots just aren't very exciting. I think that could, it feels slow there, although it's not slow, because the last like 10, 12 minutes of the episode take place from the football game onward. So that's a huge chunk of the episode, but it just seems really, really dull there. Like it just wasn't, the cinematography wasn't too exciting in that sense. For the prop work, I think this episode is better than the last. Good examples or funny examples, Buffy yo-yoing in the beginning part of the episode, shoveling. The shoveling was, you know, it's always good when you can get a shovel in there and then Al rests his hands on it. He does good work. Eric with the camera is also excellent. I think just to me, just some of the nostalgia of the hanging of the photos, like I said.
This is more of a prop assessment than a pacing assessment.
Ultimately, I think... And some really good prop work again in the end, I think, with the large knife and then throwing it at Buffy catching it. That's okay. It's not out of this world good. So I think overall the pacing is better than season one. I don't think it's up to the standard of season two, episode one. And I think to me, the cinematography was a little bit too staid at the end of the football game. I guess that's where I'll leave it. I guess so. That's sort of my assessment. I think emotionally, the episode's pretty true to the story as well. But that's a separate thing.
But, true to the story.
True to the literal story. The emotional. The end. It ends pretty similarly. That's apparently something only I can recognize. Like pornography. It looks different to everyone. I don't know. No. Anyways, I can't explain the emotional thing, but all right. I don't know. So that's my assessment. You guys can tell me if you thought the pacing was bad, props were bad, prop work, costume. Costume was decent. I think it's funny that Cordelia's sundress looks normal. I mean, that's going to stand the test of time. Some of the costumes was pretty good. Willow's costume, wardrobe, I'm not sure standing the test of time. It looks cool now, though. It's kind of a hipster look, weirdly enough.
I feel like we should call this segment Props Department.
I think we should. There's a Twitter.
Props to Travis.
There's a Twitter page called like Bad Buffy Outfits, where they just highlight incredibly really? Bad Buffy outfits. Yeah,
I got to get on Twitter. Because then I could follow the Buffy Virgin podcast on Twitter.
Yeah, you can follow the Buffy Virgin podcast on Twitter, by the way. Buffy Virgin Pod. Kill count? One vampire staked, one body brought back to life and then destroyed, so net zero.
It's a wash.
Yeah, it's a wash. So, you know, three corpses played with, two kidnappings it's of never. One person. That's it. I mean, just one real death. Vampire staked. So
that's a overall pretty safe Buffy episode.
Yeah, well, Giles even calls it overall.
Yeah, Snyder wasn't there to call it. That's too bad.
Yeah, I miss Snyder. Armin Shimmerham.
Your boy, Armin Shimmerham.
Where's my boy?
What are the recommendations, Dennis?
For this week, I decided to focus on the gross, like, planning to fuck a corpse plan. Ooh. And so I picked Frankenhooker for the similar plan of like, my girlfriend's dead, so I'm going to build her up again, but this time out of hooker parts. And that's a genuine recommendation. That's a fun movie. And I chose Flesh for Frankenstein, which has a corpse fucking scene. And it's also known as like Andy Warhol's Frankenstein. That one's a harder recommendation. I like it a lot, but it's not for the general audience. Not everyone's going to like it.
I think everybody figured that out when you just what you just said.
And my final, and actually even harder to watch than Flesh for Frankenstein, my final recommendation, and only for the like truly brave able to like deal with it, is the high school. It's not even a Frankenstein movie, but the high school sex with a corpse movie, Dead Girl. Which is a good movie. It's a struggle, but It's well done.
Oh, what about Cemetery Man? Would that get in there?
Oh, yeah. Well, did they ever have sex with a corpse in that?
I believe they do.
There's the sex in the estuary. I've always liked a good estuary. In general, Cemetery Man is one of my high recommendations for everyone that they, if you want to be friends with me, you should like Cemetery Man.
How do they watch them? Is it like Amazon, Netflix, the dark web?
Go to the dark web. Flesh for Frankenstein for a while was on Netflix, but you don't want to watch it on Netflix because it's very highly censored. So you want to find like an old DVD copy probably. Dead Girl is probably available. Like if you know any video stores that are going out of business, you can find it for like $1 probably.
Yeah, there's one that's going out of business near my place. 50 cents for every DVD right now.
Yeah. Go search for it there. That's where it'll be. That's my...
That's the video.
And Frankenhooker is on VHS DVD. It's probably streaming somewhere. It's actually censored, but it's on YouTube. You could watch it all on YouTube without the good parts.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to the podcast. Is that it for the gang?
Yeah, that's how we end the episode. We go, I guess that's it.
So I want to just shout out, just say, you know, make sure you check out the Twitter account, Buffy Virgin. We've got DennisComics.com. I think that's, I always screw that up.
With an X, comics with an X.
Comics with an X. Dennis with one N. That's a throwback to childhood.
Or then, my daily life, whatever.
Mike's got like an Instagram thing that people follow. Like, Mike, don't you have an Instagram or something?
Yeah, I'm Michael Pulley on Instagram, but that's not...
That's like a thing, though.
That's a thing, sure.
You're posting some Buffy art on that. And there's a Buffy Virgin Instagram, which doesn't get as updated as other stuff, but it's there.
And then if you have a child and you want to move to Philadelphia and your child is in fourth, fifth, or sixth grade, you can enroll them at John's High School and then, you know, interact with John through a really... like a fun parent-teacher situation and a Buffy podcast situation.
Yes, that's right. You too can become one of my students if your parents win the charter school lottery in Philadelphia.
Yeah. You could request a Buffy-themed technology education. John will do that. John will do a tailored program.
He'll jack you in.
To live in Vancouver, Washington, and be a septuagenarian, there's a possibility that you could be treated at a facility with Dr. Travis.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
But he won't acknowledge the existence of Buffy Virgin to you, I'm afraid.
Because I'm still against the name. I'm against the name as much as anyone can be against the name and still be on the podcast and be absolutely wacky about the podcast.
I feel again, like we're too far gone, man.
Yeah, I know. Well, you think. All right, so DennisComics.com, comics with an X. There's a Twitter, Buffy Virgin. There's an Instagram, Buffy Virgin. There's Michael Pulley in real life.
Yeah, there's
me in real life. Travis, and there's my friend John. So I have children enrolled in the John school, and things can only get better from that. Armin Shimmerham is not his principal, so everything is good.
there are two Buffy virgins on Twitter. One hasn't updated since 2014 and is not us, and so that's why we're Buffy Virgin Pod. So make sure to follow the right one.
Right.
All right.
Please message me on Twitter, and we'll read your comments on the air. All right. Thanks so much.
Peace out.